Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July the 29th, 1999, and in Koinonia Creekside room this afternoon is Erica Jacobs' session called Hey, Look, the title of my session has the word lesbian in it. Let's listen in. It's number 99-5.
And if it gets noisy out there, I want you to feel free to jump up and close the door. So, Tape Ministry, you can roll the tape. My name's Jake Jacobs, and I work here at Holden. I've been here for about 2 years, and am about to leave. Monday, in fact.
Oh, really?
So, this is...
You're the painter.
Yeah. And anyway, I've been doing these sessions the past couple summers in the hopes of creating a place where people can just talk. I think talking about gay and lesbian issues in the church is always so hard and always such a huge deal that I think it's good to come together and be able to share some ideas and some stories. Hopefully in a more relaxed environment than sometimes we get. So I hope you feel comfortable asking any questions you have. If you have questions about what it's like to be gay, I'm happy to answer them. I promise that you'll be more embarrassed before I am about any question you could possibly ask me. So I'm used to it. And I hope we can share our experiences and stories and ideas, and hopefully have some collective good stuff happen. So, with that, I'll tell you a little bit about myself, and then maybe we can just go around the circle and share your name and what brought you to this session, what piqued your interest. What was the title or some experience you've had? And then hopefully we can just pick up on some of that and continue the conversation. So, like I said, I've been here at Holden for 2 years, and I came here pretty much after college. I worked for about 9 months in Phoenix, Arizona, between graduating and moving up here. And I grew up in Phoenix and went to school in Houston, Texas, at Rice University. And I would say that I've pretty much always known I was a lesbian. At least, I've always known there's something awfully different about me than most people. And even though I didn't really have words for that necessarily, I kind of suspected it. But I didn't really want to think about it. My family's real open, but it was not an open topic of conversation. It was kind of, well, maybe, but you know, you can figure that out on your own. So, basically I didn't think about it at all until I got to college. And it was in college that I got involved in a group called InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, which is a fairly conservative student Christian group that's nationwide. And what InterVarsity taught me was how to be authentic and how to trust that God loves you. And in learning that, I began to come to terms with the fact that I'm gay. Unfortunately, that wasn't really what they had in mind. And that caused some problems. But I think that there's no way that I could imagine, really, being open about being gay without being a Christian. I just don't think I'd be able to put up with all the junk that gets thrown at me if I didn't know with such solidity that God loves me. And that's been really important for me. I came up here and hung out and have really enjoyed meeting a lot of people and hearing people's stories. And my next step is seminary in Berkeley, California. I'm in the Lutheran Church I have a fancy name. I'm endorsed for candidacy, which just means that a bunch of people have decided that it's all right if I go to seminary and think about being a pastor. But at some point, someone's going to ask me, they are aware I'm gay, but someone's going to ask me whether I will choose to remain celibate in order to be a pastor. And when that time comes, we'll see what happens, and I'm not sure yet. So that's a little background on me, and just for those of you who just came in, we can share our names and what brought you here, what intrigued you about this session, or whatever.
This way?
Sure.
Chris Lang, I'm the Episcopal and Lutheran chaplain at Portland State, and a lot of young people, some of them working through identity issues, and it's a very real issue. So there's a pastoral concern. I'm also, as an Episcopalian, just notice there's a long article in here about how the Episcopal Church is about to self-destruct because it is so gay-friendly. And that 2 years ago at the Lambeth Conference, some bishops from Africa were influenced by conservative bishops in the U.S. And there was a very strong traditional resolution around homosexuality passed. So the projection is that at our next triannual general convention, this is going to blow up. And there were things left out. Christianity today is fairly conservative in its own way. But I'm just very aware that these things extend into the institutional life of the church in very real ways. And I have I'm an old peace and justice type who's been most involved with economic justice in the last few years, and some racial. I did diversity training for a while, but all of these things interconnect, and so I'm glad to be here.
I'm Judy Lang, and I'm here to learn.
I'm Sarah Johnson, and I guess I'm here to learn too. I don't know much about the different views that the church has towards these issues, and so I'm just interested to see what people have to say.
My name is Mark Johnson. I'm a pastor of the Northwest Washington Synod, and have been for that synod for 23 years. And we've got some major issues. Right now, the big one is same-sex blessings in the city of Seattle, and we've got some resolutions on the docket. So it's a major issue in the church. And I'll learn as much as I can.
Yeah, I'm quite secret in my feelings about the subject. There's not too much about it at all. But all the biblical verses and all of that, but I never could figure out why in the world would someone choose to live that lifestyle? And it just really baffled me. And I said, well, something's not right there for someone to choose that. And perhaps I'll say more later.
My name's Mary, and I'm from Seattle, and I just actually became a Lutheran recently, and actually at Luther, I was really college, and I remember going to the reconciling community there, and I actually didn't realize that gay and lesbian pastors weren't ordained in the church until just recently when I was reading the Lutheran magazine, so I just wanted to hear what people had to say about it and what different ideas were.
Could I go back? I agree, this is going to be one issue that really tears up the church, and I think it's as explosive as just anything we've ever had.
My name is Linda, and I'm from Seattle area, and this is my partner, Don, and we've been together for 15 years, and there's a little girl who's four, who's with us, and we saw this on the dock, and we thought, ooh, we'll come see what that's to say.
I'm Jean Smith. I'm from Steel Springs, Colorado. And I kind of belong to Missouri Synod Lutheran Church by default, which is very conservative on the gay community. And I just wanted to know, kind of get an idea more where I'm from an ELCA background, definitely, which is much more liberal than the stance. And I just want to know what's going on in the church and how to approach. People in Missouri Synod Lutheran Church who is very, that's the worst thing in the world to be found out. My husband and I separated, he came out 11 years of marriage as being gay, so I have a whole deal there with gays and lesbians, but I know many, and many are dear friends, so I struggle with their place in our church community and their acceptance in our community.
My name is David Spona. I'm in the Minneapolis area. And back in college, a best friend of mine, just a wonderful fellow, came out and he went to seminary at Luther and went through 2 years, and then he stopped because of his sexuality. He felt he could not commit to himself that he would have been the most wonderful pastor. My father's a pastor. My uncle is on the staff at Luther. And my dad has met Bill several times and actually has done a 360 on his views toward the ordination of gay and lesbians because of meeting. I'm fairly convinced that often in small towns, especially in the Midwest, the issue is that people just haven't met people of faith who are gay lesbians because it's still a really stigma to come out. I was up here a number of years ago with Ruth Frost and Phyllis Harper up here, Jeff Johnson, and there was a number of folks from the San Francisco area. And that was a very powerful witness. So I'm here to listen to learn more to know what things are at now.
I'm David Wee from Northfield, Minnesota. My wife and I have 3 children, and 10 years ago, our youngest, our daughter Allison, figured out that she was a lesbian, and we've been living with that blessing ever since, and it's something that has enriched our lives immensely, and yet also caused great frustrations as we look at the way in which our society and our church and even our local congregation reacts to the gay and lesbian community. So my wife and I do a lot of speaking on this issue at churches and other places. And I'd like to get better ideas on how we can move the church off the dime on this, because I think it's one of the scandalous things about our church is its official policies. I think our daughter would be ordained now if our church did ordain lesbians who don't promise to be celibate, and it hurts us a great deal that she has chosen not to go into the ministry, which is a part of our longtime family. She's going into teaching, which I think is just fine, but that wasn't her first choice. So I'd like ideas and support and help on how to work on this.
I'm Gertrude Gunholm from Rock Island, Illinois, and I was here at the village when it was first brought up. And there was a right friendship between two people, which occurred in the chalet where I was living. And it was not marriage, but it was a rite of friendship for these two lesbian girls to live together. They were over 50 years of age, and people got so upset that some of them were ready to leave the village immediately. They thought Holden Village was just becoming a place for it. gays and lesbians to meet. The most wonderful person that was here was a woman who was 87 years old, who said, what's wrong with two women who are over past their 50s that they cannot live together and support one another? Nobody else is going to take care of them. Isn't it possible for them to live together? This was tremendous witnessing for me to know that this woman was so open-minded that she could understand this situation. Since then, Holden has attempted to be, it's one of the joys of Holden that we're willing to discuss it here and hope people find some answers. Nobody forces you to it. You don't have to leave here changing if you don't want to. So I call this the mind stretcher at Holden. A real enrichment for the church to find out what is this issue about. And they argue here all the time, you know, it says in scripture that it's wrong. I go back and say that was Old Testament times. We talk about perversion of sexual permissiveness, prostitutes and all that in Old Testament history. When Christ came, he says, he didn't say, what's your sexual preference? He says, come follow me. And that's what we should. I think our church is arguing with the law rather than what did Christ say. But I think we're way behind in this as far as the church's understanding. They're worshiping the law more than they are what Christ said. We're all baptized people. I've known so many that have been here, plus others I know personally. I taught junior high. One of them is gay, teaches history or geography at the University of California in San Jose. I had him in junior high. His parents were my teachers. I taught in a little town in Iowa. Later on, he came to college, and he ended up coming to Holden with his group from San Francisco, the first church that came out. And there were about 25 people, and I thought, I can't tell which ones are gay or not. I mean, they're all members of the congregation. Max happened to be in this group, and I was so surprised. Here he was, this former student of mine. I mean, he can't say enough about Holden, and they were going to come back this year as a whole group from that church, but they were too crowded and couldn't get in. But I must know about 40 of them now. And people come and tell me who they are. One of my best friends at home, son, this is a Garden of Eden as far as she's concerned, because she can come and talk to parents and understand having a gay son who died of AIDS even, you know, but where else can she come and talk and be understood? What I think the joy of the Holden is and what its ministry is to help our church understand what this is. These are baptized children of God, and most of them are more intellectual and more Christian than I am. That I can't say enough about. Our church is wrong on this, worshiping the law rather than what the gospel says. They're all baptized children of God. They should be ordained. And all the ones I know have doctorates, they're professors, they're pastors, you know, highly educated. But talk about our government, you know, in the army, they all say it's the heterosexuals that cause problems. It's the others, the permissiveness of sex that leaves orphans all over the world. It's not the gay people. I just think we see it all wrong. To me, the church is way behind in its times, and I'm waiting for the day for them to change their mind. I was in on a synod meeting back home, and I support the AIDS Walk. He is a junior high student I have. He writes me every year. And so I support him, and the Lutherans Concerned wrote to me and said, would you pass out the material at the synod? So I said, sure, I'd be glad to. So they sent me these hundreds of bulletins for the synod meeting. And I thought, well, I suppose I have to ask the bishop first. And I knew the assistant to the bishop. So I asked him, I said, can I pass out this material? And he said, I'm not sure. You know, then we have the abortion issue coming. I said, that's not the same thing at all. I said, if you don't let me pass them out here at this meeting, I'm going to put them in the windshield of every car that comes. Anyway, I passed them out. I got this one friend who came here because of her son who died of AIDS to help me, and I only had one person out of that whole Senate assembly come back with the material and say, I don't want to read that stuff. They all took it, and it was wonderful at that meeting. But at the end of the Senate meeting, the last session, the 200 young people that were came and said, what are we going to do? Are you leaving this issue up to us, or have you done something about it? And it was dead silent. And one young professor who was on our faculty said, I've just been in Chicago with a fraternity, a brother of mine who was dying of AIDS, and he said, who am I to say I'm a Christian and you're going to hell? And everybody was dead silent. And I was so proud of that fellow to get up and say what he did. So I called him up when I got home and I said, did you have anybody stop? He said, one man out of all that group said, you shouldn't have done that. But I thought his witness in front of those young people in that whole Senate assembly, since then I think we've become a little bit more understanding in the church. It hasn't gone where it should yet, and we're still fighting. But I think if we keep working at it and witnessing in that sense, our church is finally going to say, we're way behind the times. We've got to do it. And the United Church of Christ ordains them now. Two people this year have written me. They've been voted Teachers of the Year. One of them is Dan Spencer, whose book is over here. He's finally being admitted to the United Church of Christ as a minister, but the Lutheran Church won't accept him. Most wonderful person you ever want to meet. And I just think our church really has got to keep working on this, trying to understand the issue. So I'm all for it. I mentioned it to one board member up here. He's also a doctor. And I said, I think I know 40. And he said, now you know 41. So I keep adding to the year numbers that I know who are KMS. And I'm tremendous people as far as I'm concerned. I've talked too long with my panel, but I wanted to say what's happened to Holden since, and I think this is one place they call Garden of Eden. I come to Holden and talk to find people who understand being a parent of these kids, you know, understanding who I am myself. And I think we're just so grateful for this place that we have this open opportunity to talk about it. You don't want to believe it? That's okay too. So hopefully some changes will occur while you're here. Okay, I'm through.
How are you? Oh, I'm Sue Roberts, and I'm a United Methodist, and we are, and I happen to come from the Nevada, Northern California conference of the United Methodist Church that has been experiencing a little notoriety lately in the because some of my best friends did a Holy Union Service, I'm not sure what they called it, for two women, but one of them, the conference lay leader, women in their 60s, who've been together for like 18 years or something, and the conference is just splitting apart. I thought maybe there would be that's something I learned from the Lutherans.
Yes.
What is splitting apart?
Well, our conference, it's really caused a real split among the pastors and the churches, between the reconciling churches and those who think we're gone the wrong way.
One of the saddest things that I thought was Lutheran concerns met on our campus. And an elderly couple came, who were a little bit as old as, not quite as old as I am, but they were there. And they had been to, they were up in the northeast part of Iowa, and the pastor happened to say something about it in his sermon, and the board went up to him and told him he's through because he even brought it up in the sermon. And this couple that was there had two children, a boy and a girl, and they told him, you must leave the church. And they'd been members there all their life. And they were at this meeting on Lutheran's concern and said, what do? We've lived there all our lives and been members of this church. Do we fight it or do we stay here? I don't know what happened, but I felt so sorry for them. You know, they've been told to get out of the church because your parents and these kids.
They've been told to get out because they were parents.
Right. I mean, talk about the cruelty of that. I just couldn't believe this.
That's religion for you.
Right. Wrong religion. Not Christ. We're all baptized.
It's religion.
Yeah, it is religion.
Yeah.
I'm Berita Perry. I'm from Seattle. And I want to thank Gertrude. I wish people that are 20, 30, 40 years younger than you had the insight and the wisdom that you have about issues like this. And also, David, what he was talking about, I can relate to, as I have friends, I have colleagues, and I'm a therapist, and in my practice I have families that were recently someone who has been married for about 20 years, has five daughters, and is struggling right now with what to do about his own sexual orientation, what to do about the marriage, and I mean, and the pain and the struggles that these people have is just incredible. And you know, I mean, that anyone has with his divorce, but I mean, it's the splitting up of the family. I mean, I see, that's what I see more that is more disturbing to me than and not knowing what the answers are. And again, what David said about the church and how we, you know, how we deal with it. I don't know what the answers are. I mean, it's always an individual decision about what you do, and I understand that, and I, you know, and I applaud that. But and then the one other thing I want to say is the way it's been politicized sometimes, I think it becomes very negative in what happens when we see the headlines of how the journalists handle things. And I know we have in Seattle, we have a very wonderful men's course, and my husband and I always, maybe anyone that's here from Seattle would know about it, and it's a wonderful course of these very talented men. You maybe know about it, do you know?
I know the parents of someone who's
yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, you know, and again, you know, we're talking about anyone else that has these wonderful talents. And yet, one night, we went to this. They always have a wonderful Christmas program in Wales every year, and we took friends with us, and we were rather offended by the ACT UP people because we were all very supportive of these people, as were the people that were there, or they wouldn't have been there. Mm-hmm. Because we love their music and we believe in their cause, you know. But then when it was so politicized, it would just make I felt very uncomfortable. I mean, for everyone that was there, and I particularly for the friends that we had brought, because they certainly didn't have strong biases against that lifestyle, and yet I felt like we just kind of been thrown at us, and it isn't. We just like to deal with people as people, you know. I hate the politicizing of it so much. I don't know. That's just where I'm coming from.
I'm Julie Boleyn, long-term staff member here, computer support person, and I came out September of 97 and have been up here for a year now. Gosh, there's so many things that I could say. And I guess for me, in my next steps, when I leave here, I'm considering what church I want to go to, since I'll be moving to a new town, and I definitely feel like I am a Lutheran, but the Lutheran church has not shown me that I'm very wanted. There are definitely Reconciled in Christ congregations in the Seattle area, which is where I'll be moving to. But I also feel that it's important. Let me explain the situation. I'll be living on Bainbridge Island, which is an island off of Seattle. And I don't know, actually, I've never been there.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I hear it's beautiful. Everything about it sounds wonderful. But the Reconciled in Christ congregations in the Seattle area are all over on the other side of the Sound. And I am definitely a community-oriented person. This is something that's very important to me. And to live in the same town as my church seems to make a lot of sense. But then, I don't know what I'm getting into there. So I struggle with wanting to be accepted by my congregation, but also recognizing that that may not be the case, and where do I fit in as trying to make place for myself, or asking a congregation that may not be willing to make a place for me?
I don't think you have to go to a Reconciled in Christ congregation to find an open congregation. I think those are two different issues.
Yeah, well,
because I know congregations in the North Pacific District or North Pacific area that mm-hmm. very openly about gay and lesbian issues that are not officially on Reconciled in Christ. I mean, just for
sure. Right. Currently in Portland, which is my hometown, I'm a member of a church that's considering becoming a Reconciled in Christ congregation. And I'm actually out to a small group of those people, and it's a wonderful sort of situation. I'd be very sad to leave those people. But there's also a sense to me that without the church actually actively grappling with those issues, there is a sense that I'm not actually safe. That there's no, and maybe perhaps there's, I'll never be. And that's not necessarily an expectation of mine, but perhaps a hope.
Okay.
Could I ask David a question?
It's my turn.
Yeah, we need to.
Get around. I'm Shirley Johnson. I grew up in a time when this issue wasn't talked about or admitted. And I know there's lots of points of view. And I'm here just to hear some of those points of view.
I'm Ron Osborne from Western Montana, Hamilton, Ravalli County, Bitterroot Valley, one of the most conservative places in the world. We are surrounded by extremely conservative churches who preach hate all the time. I have been very, very fortunate to have come to Holden for many, many years. I've heard Gertrude say what she said tonight many times, and it was Holden that educated me on these issues, and I have, over the years, have come to know and to love many of our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters. It upsets me in my community when I hear people say they can't raise children in these homes because what are they teaching them, and so on. Some of the most loving parents that I know are lesbian couples. I have to admit that all of the gay and lesbian people that I know, there's probably two persons, are all devout Christians. I'm not sure I know of any who are not. That's just the circles that I've been in. And I really feel that we who are now members of the Lutheran Church, I say now because I'm not sure about myself whether I want to stay with them. UCC looks better all the time. But there are two organizations in the Lutheran Church. One is the Network, and the other one is Lutheran Lesbian and Gay Ministries. Both of them support gay, lesbian, Lutherans, Lutheran pastors who are fighting to keep their jobs, candidates who are trying to get into, who are trying to get ordained, and I would strongly recommend that we get involved with those two organizations and support them all the way. And by the way, I went to Dan Spencer's ordination in October. It was one of the most joyous. I can't even describe it. One of the most joyous church ceremonies I have ever been to in my life. There were representatives of the Jewish community. Were you there, David?
No.
We just happened to be in Minneapolis at the time because of my grandchildren. Dan had invited us, and I couldn't pass that up. Members of the Jewish community, members of the Native American community, members of all the denominations. I just can't express how joyous and wonderful that and what a loving ceremony that was.
I'm Eleanor Barnes from the Seattle area, and I'm here to listen. I feel too that the Lutheran Church needs to get off the dime, as someone said.
I'm Nancy Post, and I've been coming here since the 70s. And like you, Holden has completely changed my thoughts on gays and lesbians. And my big gripe is why we have the right to ask a candidate for the pastorate their sexual persuasion. You can't ask that on any work application. You know, it just blows my mind that we think we have the right to make a choice, no matter what their life is like or what their beliefs are or anything else. We would judge someone on that. It's crazy.
You came in late. Are you just going around?
Yeah, showing our name, Jim.
Jim Gamrat from Seattle. And, some of our best friends are homosexual, interested in life, Christian, and open to the things that change our attitude.
My name is Paul Shelbug. I just walked in. I'd just like to hear what you have to say.
And I'm going here for the same reason, just for information.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for coming. And then Cliff has a question, amongst others, but we can just pick up on some of what people have said and share ideas and so on. For the next bit.
I don't know how to put all this together. So.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to Nathan. You know, were you always say, you know, it's all right to be a homosexual? You know, me, myself, you know, we can talk, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, all that stuff. And as I said, I never could understand it. I never could understand it. But I think that a lot of people are really tied up on the law. And, you know, and we need the law. Thou shalt not. But I think a lot of these people are using that. And you know, I've tried to use that as a guideline in my life. But I think that you said when Christ came, he did away with the law. And he gave us one law to show love. And how do you show it? And it was very difficult for me, you know, growing up like this. And thank goodness that I was not a prejudiced person. And my daughter, you know, she was able to come out and write and trust me enough. Mm-hmm. So, and I know if that had been one of those thou shalt not, that she could have never done it. Never done that. And how do your feelings about the gays and lesbians? Has it always been all right?
We didn't think about it very much.
I think that's what happened.
I grew up in a Lutheran pastor's family and can't ever remember a dinner table conversation with my parents about the issue. And, you know, I was 50 years old, didn't think I knew any gay or lesbian people. We had a few wild guesses about a few people, but and my wife and I didn't talk about it much. We get involved in political issues and racial justice and all that, but this was one issue that we just didn't think about. And then all of a sudden we realized we'd been living with a gay person for 20 years, and it forced us to rethink everything. And to think about it really for the first time. And it was evident that our beloved daughter was a wonderful person, and it wasn't an issue for us. We knew that the passages in the Bible that were bothering her at the time just tore her apart, because she thought she was going straight to hell. And before she even told us, she was suffering for about a year trying to figure out what was wrong with her. And one of my greatest regrets is that because my wife and I didn't think about this and talk about it and informed ourselves, we weren't able to be there to talk with our daughter and help her realize that she was not a sinful person and that she was not bad. She had to struggle on that without us. So that's one of my regrets about my failure as a parent. That's why I think all of us need to talk about it, listen to others, and when we meet the gay and lesbian community.
See, that was my thought. Man, is this sinful? Is she living in sin? I mean, I really had to struggle with that and work through it. Look at some of these passages.
You can't help how you're born. It's no different.
That's what I say.
You're born differently.
You're born that way.
Right. But isn't it more of a struggle for people who are of faith than it is people that say that might be agnostic or, you know, not really have the big concerns about their Christianity? Because, I mean, that seems to be the big blocking.
It's a double burden. Not only the...
I mean, that's what I see in the people I know that are very strong faith.
The atheist on his anti-gay is...
Well, the struggles they have, like this one
one person I know of that's, you know, struggling with his marriage or leaving his marriage, and he's been being counseled by his partially feels different people, including myself, and also his Catholic priest, you know, and he gets all kinds of different messages about, you know, what he should be doing, you know, and I'm making him feel guilty. I mean, there's a lot of guilt about it.
Yeah.
Especially if you are counseling with someone in the ministry who is, has really strong feelings about it.
It seems to me that there's the challenge for people of faith is you actually practice forgiveness of yourself. And if your identity has been threatened by, you know, encountering somebody, you face the practice of love in a sense that it feels like a wound when you have to let go of some particular prejudice or a political position that you've backed yourself into. And I mean, this is, it's for me, it's another case of being called into mature faith. So I experienced that around, I was in a black church in St. Paul for 3 years where I was running into myself all the time, putting my foot in my mouth, you know, as the priest in charge. And to me it applies in that sense. And people who say that this issue doesn't connect with racism because this is not as, you know, you can hide your homosexuality or something.
Yeah,
it doesn't show on your skin all day long. Well, you know, that underestimates both the humanness that we are and the strength of that mm-hmm. that we have been given. And so I just connect with it that way as a practice, faith practice.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've sensed is that many of the people who oppose homosexuality because of their faith are trying to be faithful to what they understand the Bible to say and to how they've been taught all their life, and it is very difficult to just abandon that overnight. As you say, it's like a wound to feel that I've been wrong all these years, and I've, so has my pastor and, you know, and my confirmation teachers. It's hard to just change quickly, but the best way it happens is when we meet these people who we know are children of God and faithful Christians and wonderful people, and they happen to be gay or lesbian. And, you know, why should there be a, you know, we realize, why should there be anything negative toward them by the rest of us?
The thing that helped me the most, I think it was about 1987 when Jim DeLange was here, and he's the pastor of the St. Francis Lutheran Church in San Francisco, the church that has been dismissed by ELCA, because Jim ordained Phyllis and Ruth. And I was confused, and I come to Holden with a wide open mind, I want to learn, and I think we all should do that. Mr. Holden is all that I've heard you say that many times too.
Well, he lived up at my chalet, you know, I had all the people a member of his church,
mm-hmm.
and his boy I had junior high was a member of his church board. You know, to hear this, and all of a sudden we come to find with it.
But I tagged around with Jim a lot, I was confused, I want to learn. So that 3 week period in 87 while I was up here, I spent a lot of time with him. And he helped me to understand that it's not a choice. And once that barrier,
that's right.
once you cut past that barrier,
mm-hmm. right.
That's a big one. And
amen.
The next thing you must do is talk openly with gay and lesbian people and feel their pain, to hear what they say. And again, the many sessions that have taken place in Holden over the many years that I've been coming have been most helpful in explaining and meeting our gay and lesbian friends. And then, of course, what we've all said already today is the love of Christ has to enter in if we are Christians. I'll never forget a conversation I was having with a a very conservative member of our ELCA congregation in Hamilton. We were talking about a mutual friend. Oh, we were talking about Anita Hill, as a matter of fact, who, as many of you know, should be ordained, but she's not, in South St. Paul. And I said something to the effect that it's a shame she can't be ordained. And this person next to me said, well, why can't she be? And I said, well, she's a lesbian. And this woman just exploded. And I said, Norma, have you ever talked with a gay person? Don't need to, citizen. Yeah. And that was it. That was the end of the discussion.
That's right.
And you can't do that.
It's not true that lesbians can't be ordained. And lesbians can't be ordained.
Anita has a partner. Mm-hmm.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that. But I mean,
yeah, that's
gay and lesbian people can be ordained in the ELCA, correct?
I think so.
And that is the policy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand the rest of it, but yeah. that's something. Okay.
Yeah, that's a church that I go on to in Minneapolis. Meetings with the Church of Hope, which has a large number of folks from Holden on there. They were going through their last process of ministering because they've had a number of turnovers there. It came on the interviews that the woman had a partner, and they had to go back. They did not feel comfortable bringing that to the congregation, and the search committee was headed by the director of music, who's gay, and it was a huge political fallout. And I'm not sure I think they are reconciled in church congregation. That they are. And that happened in one of the most liberal open congregations of the LCA in Minneapolis. And it tore the council apart. And if it can happen there, you know, it can happen.
Sign of hope.
What?
Just sign of hope.
It might be that degree anyway. Yeah, but it was just the reverse. It's like if that congregation got to the point where they found the right person, and then they found out in the interviews that she had a partner, that she was lesbian, and they stopped.
Didn't they keep her?
They did not.
Oh.
They let her go.
Oh, I meant some that kept them anyway.
They did not. They didn't want to fight that battle for ELCA.
Just seems to me that, I mean, this is a real interest for me, too, because I've been blown out of the water in congregations and settings where political issues really hit the fan. And I'm just, the sense of this being a destructive thing for the church is also something that the gifts you bring of being centered in your being and those who have overcome some of their own phobia and can walk in faith. I read an article like that Christianity Today article, and it makes me angry because it is predicting disaster with not the complete story being told and no sense of people of faith acting together and being ready to admit that there may be kind of turmoil and that there's been that in the church before and there will be in the future, but that this is not a time to despair.
I'm always interested in the fact that congregations and the whole church, you know, are worried about the congregation being torn apart by an issue. And you know, we forget that it's already happening, or has happened. There are many congregations that have, by their attitudes, you know, caused other people to leave. Or to turn somewhere else. You know, I believe that our churches would ultimately be a much stronger church and stronger congregations if we were actively witnessing to and serving the whole gay and lesbian community. And almost all of us, probably all of us, have in our extended families gay and lesbian people. And this, it's not just the gay and lesbian individuals who leave the church or become disenchanted, but their families do as well. you know, our one way we respond is that we no longer give any money to our congregation. You know, we haven't given up our church membership, but we've been members for 32 years. And there is a sense that our congregation will be struggling if members leave and there won't be as many contributions and so forth. So we, our response has been to take all the money that we used to pledge to our congregation and we give it to the network, to Lutheran Lesbian and Gay Ministry, to Lutherans Concerned, to Holden Village, to places that do support actively and you know, positively the gay and lesbian community. And these are all church, church-related and Lutheran organizations. You know, so one of the things we can do is to put our money where we think the right thing is being done. And if our congregations are not doing the right thing, I would rather give my money to the groups who are. I'm still giving it to the church. But these other groups, it makes me feel much better. It makes my wife feel much better. Even though we can't get the congregation that confirmed our daughter and promised to stand by her whole spiritual journey, they are not willing to stand up and stand behind it now that we figured out who she is.
I think I'm missing something here. I'm up in Northwest Washington, in the corner, up in the corner of the country, and a long way from Chicago and a long way from Minneapolis. And there's some blessings about that.
Yeah.
From my perspective, and in our area, the issue centers around two issues: same-sex marriage, because of the resolutions in our synod, and ordaining gay and lesbian people who have a partner, even totally in a monogamous relationship, but still, that's why I want to clear that out.
Mm-hmm.
I do not see in our area, at least in the churches in our cluster and area, the problem, the issue of accepting homosexuals in the congregations. Is that something that I'm missing? I mean, in our period, maybe I can only speak for our congregation, but we have gay and lesbian people in our parish, our organs is gay, and I'm not dealing with the sense of animosity, but if I bring up the ordination issue, I do know, now we're up the end, so maybe I don't think in a different place than other people in the country, but I see that that's, for us anyway, it's the ordination. That's the big issue, and probably, more than anything else, not the acceptance of gay folks in the church.
I think being a Northwestern person too, I think that the issue is also silence, that it's not something we talk about at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do start to talk about it, then things, even if we're talking about it at a totally benign sort of level, just at the point of saying gay and lesbian people exist, then I think things do start to, the pot starts to bubble a little bit and things get uncomfortable. In my church, the pastor actually blessed the union of two very close friends of mine, and nothing was said at all, not a word within the congregation, and people seem to like it that way. Does that mean that they support and accept these two people? No, it doesn't mean that at all. In fact, they don't really feel like they're welcome in that congregation because nobody sent them letters of encouragement or support. So it's not something that, when other marriages happen in the congregation, the reaction is totally different. And I think it's largely that silence. For me, the most difficult part of coming out was dealing with the fact that there is so much silence around an issue, around this issue. Because to me, silence even more meant that it's not acceptable. It's something so bad that we aren't even willing to talk about it and recognize that it exists. And I think that Northwest congregations are still in that sort of situation.
I have an analogy that might be helpful. In Minnesota, the Episcopal Diocese has had a history of working with Indian congregations, but the history was that they were served by white clergy until about 25, 30 years ago, when the diocese began with some other regional effort to develop a program to train and ordain Native American people. Sounds like an obvious step, right? But it created tremendous problems finding the people who would be willing to go through the training. I was in seminary in Milwaukee with two or three of these men who had all kinds of struggle to get through the cultural gap that allowed them to be seen as worthy, you know. Dignus est, they say, at your ordination or getting your diploma. And these guys have hit the wall in various ways. Some are still hanging in there. But it also allowed lay ministry, it affirmed the lay ministry of folks. So I just think ordaining people, ordination of somebody without denying their being as inclined toward a sexual practice that may not be our own, if you're demanding celibacy based on these identity issues, you're leading, it opens that gate to what I would call active discrimination, that is, that wounds people, that does not allow them to be themselves. So I at least when I did that kind of training, every time I tried to be a know-it-all about race or something, there was women or others that said, hey, you're talking too much, let her talk, you know, my partner that I'm working with. I mean, it's, these things are just everywhere, and to work through it and to understand the Spirit will move us and heal us and guide us is, that's my hope.
I'm interested in what you said about choice, and I would like to hear from you folks, because I've read and heard that there are other points of view. So I want to know what you have to say, if you don't mind.
For me personally, it certainly has nothing to do with choice. It was more a understanding of who I really was and understanding how much energy I'd been expending trying to avoid parts of myself and pretending to be somebody I wasn't. I think that's maybe when you realize how hard you've been trying to not be yourself is when you realize what an integral part of your sexual orientation really is. I think sexuality runs along a continuum, though, and so people will probably view it in different ways depending where on the continuum they are. I know that it becomes a kind of a, like Ron said, that's one of the big blocks that you kind of get over is choice versus, being born that way. But I don't know. I think once you get over on the other side of that block, you find out, even though you're thinking about sexuality in a different way, you don't necessarily have any more or less information. I sort of feel like whether you want to see it as a choice or not, it's a question of valuing a person's identity.
Do any of you know members of the gay and lesbian community who say, well, I was born heterosexual and grew up heterosexual, but I just decided I wanted to be a lesbian, or I wanted to be a
girl? I mean, obviously as a lesbian, I have a lot of lesbian
friends,
and sometimes all the time, like, who would choose this? Lynn and I've been together 13 years, and I mean, I don't think a week goes by that I'm defending our relationship. You know, it's very solid. We're raising a daughter; she's 4, and it's not at all a choice. And as you said, I mean, I fought it within myself for years, this just can't be happening to me. You know, and until I realized, oh, this is how I am, this is who I am, and I can be happy, then everything was great after that. So, I don't know anyone who says it was a choice.
I actively fought my identity as a lesbian. I was actually married for 2 years to a man. Very, very dear friend of mine. And in my youthful naivety, I thought that that would be enough. In some of my upbringing, I had come around the idea that the most, that a marriage between any two people could work. And so, heck, I had this great friend, why not? But what ended up happening is that I hid myself in that relationship, and I was not the Julie you know, or the Julie I hope you come to know. I was spending a lot of energy hiding. And when I came out, when I made the decision to accept who I am, it was physically like a burden was lifted off my shoulders. I actually felt physically lighter. And I didn't have to live with that lie, because I really was lying to people. And that to me is the sin of being in the closet, is you're lying to people and not allowing for full relationships to happen. And in that, fortunately, Eric is still a very good friend of mine. And we had that conversation throughout our relationship. And we made the decision at one point that either this is all going to go downhill really badly, or we can choose to part as friends now and make the best of things. So that's what we did. And I'm very glad that we made that choice.
Well, it's getting on towards dinner time. Thank you all for coming, and now you know other people are interested in this conversation, so please continue it on the Ark or in the dining hall or wherever else you are, and feel free to ask me questions. I'm here till Monday.
You had a tough job of keeping this going, didn't you?
Oh, gosh, you guys just, you know, yeah. So close. Anyway, I hope that you find other